You're back with the Get Out of Deck Guy. You got the old Get Out of Deck Guy, myself, Steve Rode, and the new Get Out of Deck Guy, Damon Day. Say hello, Damon.
I like how your voice changed when you called yourself old, and all of a sudden it changed into old man voice. The old Get Out of Deck Guy.
I was using my radio voice at that point.
Hello, Steve.
Hello, Damon. Hello. Hello, puppet.
I need a parlay.
So today, I thought we should talk about the way debt makes you feel. Over the years of helping people with financial problems and living through them myself, I think I've felt all of these different emotions at one particular point. And I think, Damon, you will easily recognize some of these feelings either through what you live through or what your clients have told you about. Debt makes you feel a whole range of emotions. I remember one day, Damon, I had a guy come in to my office back then, and he was so embarrassed and traumatized about his debt that he wouldn't tell me about his situation. And I assured him I wouldn't judge him. I've heard it all. The number really doesn't matter. And he whispered in my ear, "I have $3,000 of debt." And then he collapsed in my arms, sobbing. And the very next person I talked to that day, he was like, "Yeah, I got $300,000 of debt."
Yeah.
You know, it doesn't matter. Yeah. Doesn't matter at all. So it's very interesting that emotions, the way you feel when you're in debt, entirely cloud your judgment, your opinion, and your better common sense about how to deal with it. So, Damon, I'm going to run down this list, and I'm going to end with the big one. The first one, actually, I wasn't quite sure what to call this one. So, on my list, I have it, hookers.
What? A bunch of cocaine and hookers? What's that clip?
Yeah.
Yeah, you just won the lottery. What are you going to spend it on? Bunch of cocaine and hookers. Oh, cut that.
yep, no. But over the years, I've had, I don't know, 20 women tell me that the way they were going to pay off their debt was by becoming an escort, or they were already an escort, or becoming a prostitute, because that, you know, they thought that they could make, or a sugar baby, or whatever it is, they thought they could make, or were making easy money that way. Yeah. I'm not sure what the emotion is for that. Maybe that's a secondary effect of the other emotions, but there's no need to become a hooker or an escort or a sugar baby if you don't want to, because there are definitely options. So let's go through the first one, then. The emotional condition of being embarrassed.
Yeah, that's a big one.
I mean, we've both talked to probably thousands of people at this point, or tens of thousands, who are entirely embarrassed and about their situation.
Well, but that's normal. I mean, that's a normal reaction where you just feel like, how did I do this? You know, I'm feeling like a failure. It's embarrassed. I don't want anybody to know about it. I'm going to get myself out of this before anybody finds out. Maybe even my significant other, you know, kind of trying to keep it from your spouse in order to, quote unquote, protect them from the issue. But I get it. I mean, see, if you remember way back in the day when I had, you know, all that debt and I was just, you know, struggling, and you just kept saying, "Why don't you file bankruptcy?" And I was like, "Steve,
yeah,
I'm a financial consultant. I can't file bankruptcy. How would that look? It'd be embarrassing. I wouldn't be able to continue to do this. I'd have to like resign in shame because I filed bankruptcy." And because of that, it took me a couple of years. And granted, there was some strategy behind why I was dragging my feet because of tax reasons and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
But I remember even back then, you know, I had my own personal reasons. Like, I don't, you know, want people to know that I may need to file bankruptcy. I'm gonna, you know, get myself out of this. I'm gonna pull myself up by my bootstraps, and I'm gonna earn a whole bunch of money, and I'm gonna just get it all paid off. Because I don't know, I don't know why I was like so fixated on that. And then now, I put it on the front page of my website. Yeah, I filed bankruptcy. It is what it is, right? And so, I mean, hey, you grow, you live and you learn, right? It's like, you know what? It wasn't that big a deal, but that experience has actually now changed the way I advise clients a lot, because I went through it myself and I realized, you know, that not only was it not that bad, it was actually one of the greatest decisions I could have made in that moment with what I was dealing with. It was the right move.
Yeah, absolutely.
And you just kept saying, well, if you were your own client, what would you advise? And I was like, oh, bankruptcy for sure. But I don't want to file bankruptcy because I don't know. I don't want to. I just don't want to. Right? So I get it. I totally get it.
Yeah, you know, you're embarrassed. But here's the thing. Nobody thinks about you as much as you do about yourself.
Yeah.
Right? The whole world is not sitting there saying, you know, what's Steve or Damon thinking right now? And why are they thinking that? People are so focused on their own lives that if you're making a decision based upon what you think other people will think of you, you're making the wrong decision. The other thing is, I can't tell you the number of times that I've had somebody who was struggling with money and they were like, I don't want my family to know. I don't want anyone to know. And then when they finally were able to deal with it and, you know, come out and say, well, this is what I was going through, they will find that a lot of their friends and people were going like, oh, yeah, me too.
Yeah. Yeah.
Nobody wants to admit.
I mean, everybody is in different situations, but, you know, suffering in silence and trying to, you know, keep it to yourself and fix it yourself, especially trying to keep it from your spouse, it's almost never going to end well. And it just makes it a lot worse when you're out there, you feel like you're on an island and you're just trying to figure it out. I mean, that's a lot of the feedback that I get from my clients when they, you know, stumble across me or whatever. It's like, I needed somebody to talk to that can understand what I was saying that wasn't in my circle of friends, right? That wouldn't judge me, that I could just say, hey man, what do I do? Like, you know, here's this crap I'm dealing with. I've been trying to figure it out. I'm on this wheel. Just tell me what to do. Tell me what I need to do. I'm finally ready. Whatever you say, that's what I'm going to do, right? I mean, they get to that point by the time they call me because they just don't want to talk about it or seek advice from people in their normal sphere of influence. They just don't want to have those kind of conversations. And I totally get it.
Yeah, I talked to a friend of a friend a couple weeks ago. My friend wanted me to talk to them. And he was like, you know, I've talked to my circle of friends about my situation and I feel like they're really judging me and everything else. I was just like, dude, who the F care?
Yeah.
You know, unless they're, you know, paying your mortgage and feeding your family or something, you got to do what's mathematically and common sense best for you. So the second emotion that I have is kind of what I think about is what happens after the whole debt thing hits the fan. Now, for me, when my debt situation hit the fan, here's the secret to know if you're deep in debt or you have problem debt. And the secret is, if you think you do, you do. My trigger for me way back in the day was when I found myself unable to sleep and watching lots of late night TV.
Well, there's a lot of good solutions you can find on late night TV, Steve, right?
Oh.
There's a reason they run late at night. A, they're cheaper, but B, the people are more susceptible to buying the shit.
That's right, because they're all not making good decisions. But after initially I felt embarrassed, and then after going through my situation, then I was left feeling ashamed about my debt and what I went through. And I primarily think I was ashamed because I was applying all those judgments that you hear other people making.
Yeah.
You know, people saying, well, you shouldn't have been in that situation or whatever, and you feel ashamed that you had problems.
You should have seen the housing crash coming. Why would you over-leverage yourself like that?
Yeah.
Hmm. Right? Yeah.
But that's the thing. When you sign up for a credit card, or whatever the loan is, the lender is saying, this is what we expect from you every month. You're going to make this payment come hell or high water. But life just doesn't work that way. You know, you get into an accident, you have a health problem. God, I remember this one guy who I had as a client who, it just bugs me right now even thinking about it. But his wife went into premature labor and their baby was stillborn. I mean, it's just horrible. And he was so worried about what his creditors would think because he was going to miss a payment.
Oh my God. Like, who the hell cares? I can't even begin to put myself in that situation. But making a bill payment would have been the last thing I could have gave two shits about if I'm going through.
I know.
I mean, hell, when I had to, and I'm a very emotional person. Just when I had this, dog, I love this dog. She was a rescue dog. And Steve knows the story. When she got cancer and we tried everything we could do, just short of cutting off her leg. I mean, I went back and forth with multiple, vets and doctors about whether it's good for her or not good for her. And I just, at the end of the day, I just think it made more sense not to do it. But dude, I was, and this was a dog, and I was just like, I went through a period there for a few weeks where I could give a shit about most. And this is like my dog. Like, she went everywhere with me. This was like my baby, And it was just like, dude. So, I mean, and that was a dog. So, and I could like, if somebody was like, oh, you forgot to make your credit card payment. I've been like, so they'll take it tomorrow. Who gives a fuck? Right? Like, oh, well, like you're not even going to be late as far as your credit report's concerned for a whole month. Like, who cares? You miss a payment by a day,
right,
or they can hit you with a $39 late fee. Okay, fine. Yeah. Do your worst.
That's what I told him. Yeah. I told him, don't worry about it. We'll deal with it. The irony is that this is the same guy who also had some other medical problems after that. And we were working with Capital One. And he said, I absolutely want to settle my debt. I want to honor my promise. And I kept saying to him, paying back half is not necessarily honoring your promise, but if that's what you want to do, and he wanted to close out his 401k, and he owed like, I don't know, 60 grand. So made an offer, and Citibank said, nope, the least will take us 40 grand. If he can't give us 40 grand, then we're not going to take it.
And Capital One?
He didn't. What did I say? Citibank? Yeah.
I just want to make sure we're all following. Yeah. We're on the same page.
Yeah. Yeah, he didn't have all that money in his 401k to do that, so he was dejected. I was talking to him on the phone. I thought, finally, he's not going to do that. And he gets home, and there's a letter in his mailbox from the bank saying they'll settle it for 27.
Yeah.
Like, thanks.
Yeah.
The next one, I think, is the most important emotion that a majority of people go through, and that is being depressed. It's not that you're just feeling blue. So back in the day when I had 20,000 clients, we did a survey and we asked people about their financial situation, and we gave them the test to determine, it's the Center for Epidemiological Studies Depression Scale. It's the industry standard psychological test for measuring depression. And out of the group of people that we talked to. In fact, this survey is on the Get Out of Debt site. If you go to getoutofdebt.org and go to the search box and search for depression for all debtors, you'll find it. Anyway, what we found was that about half the people said, nope, not depressed at all. Okay, good for you. 10% said they were moderately depressed, but 40% said that they were severely depressed, and it was more women than men. But here's the problem with depression is when you're suffering from depression, it's the inability to make a plan, to take action, to follow through, and you just end up swirling the bowl and spinning in circles. I have told so many people over the years, Damon, that before we can tackle this debt, we need to tackle your mental health and your depression. And please, either talk to your doctor or talk to a therapist, because once you can get some clarity and you can start to feel better, you'll be making decisions based on inspiration and not desperation.
Yeah.
I'm sure that you've seen people just stuck in the cycle of debt because they're just unable to make a decision.
Oh, absolutely. And the irony of it, and I know some, you can't just say, well, don't be depressed, right? I mean, it goes deeper than that. You can't, oh, okay. Well, now that you told me not to be depressed, cool. I got it. I'm not going to be depressed. Like, it's unfortunately,
yeah, it's
not
hard.
That easy. And that's why you say it's emotion, right? Sometimes emotion is,
yeah,
it's hard to control. I mean, just you're walking down the street one day and all of a sudden you start crying and you're like, where the hell did that come from? I have no idea. I wasn't planning on starting to cry. It just started to happen. But the irony of the whole thing is, like you just said, if you're depressed about it and you have this inability to make decision because you're depressed and you're waffling back and forth, I don't know what the right, and you have this paralysis of analysis, basically, and you're just looking at all these different things, that actually makes it much more likely you're not going to be able to get yourself out of the problem. So it's this like downward
spiral.
Or
you're going to leap. Or are you going to leap at the first magical solution because you just want it to quickly go away?
Well, that and there, you know, there's a lot of programs out there that, you know, will maybe pray is not the right word, but probably is the right word that, you know.
No, I think it's the right
and
word.
It goes to like, okay, we've got all these people that are potentially depressed. They're embarrassed. It ties in all the emotions, right? They're embarrassed. They're depressed. They don't want to talk to their sphere of influence about this. So I've got them. I'm going to sell them this program, and it's going to sound so amazing that they're going to be like, oh my gosh, I've been wallowing in this and not knowing what to do and just wake up every day going, this is impossible. And now there's this person on the phone saying, hey, don't worry about it. We're going to fix it. Here's our simple plan. All you're going to do is whatever, stop paying the creditors that are hounding you and just give a little bit more to us and then we'll handle it all for you. And that sounds like the greatest thing in the world in the moment because it takes the burden off of you, seemingly. Like on the surface, it seems like this is going to take this burden off my plate and I'm going to shift it to these guys and then I'm going to move forward with my life. And so that's the kind of decision most of the people are making. They're not deeply analyzing, well, what is this plan? What is this process? Who is this company? What are they planning to do? They just hear this, we'll take care of it for you. And it's just this overwhelming sense of relief that they can get just by pushing it over there. It doesn't mean it's actually going to solve the problem. It just makes them feel better in the moment.
Yeah. The other thing is that they come to grips with their financial situation as they move along. And at first they're like, oh, Bob told me he was going to magically get rid of it. And I signed up for the program and I'm sending them money. And then not far down the line where they've learned how to live with their current situation, they start asking questions like, where is my money actually going?
Yeah.
Why aren't they paying my creditors? And then they get pissed off like they got scammed. Sure, you got lied to, but the other thing is you didn't ask good decisions before you just leapt to the first magic solution. Damon, what do you call it? The magic beanstalk letter?
Oh, yeah, the magic bean. People- now you're pulling stuff from back in the day. The magic beanstalk letters from, but that's a debt validation. Some of these scams are still going around. They've been going around for years and years and years, but hey, just pay us a whole bunch of money and we're going to write these super magic beanstalk letters and send them to your creditors and they're going to shake in their boots because they won't be able to validate that you actually borrowed this money. Trust us, we have super secret laws that we have uncovered and and they're going to shake in their boots and they're going to go away. And even though you owe $50,000, if you just pay us $20,000 in 36 easy payments or whatever of $555, in 3 years, it'll all go away. And then after you're done paying us, you still might get sued by a creditor, but hey, we're not in business anymore. Sorry.
Yeah, we're gone. You know, I forgot, Damon, I've been negligent in letting people know that if they do have any sort of questions, they're listening to this and they want to talk to somebody, they can always reach out to you. I'm not doing client calls anymore, but they can find you at Damon, DamonDaywy.com. Or you can drop by the getoutofdebt.org site and read any of the 25,000 posts that I've put up over the years and search for additional information.
And check out,
Damon,
and
hey,
real quick, while you're at the Penny Stu- or Penny, while you're at the getoutofdebt.org website, check out the Penny Stupid channel, because if you do feel trapped and desperate and needing to make side hustle money, we've got ideas that are better than hooking.
Better than hooking. And also better than any multi-level marketing program. So I've seen people leap for things when they feel like they need to earn extra money. And, they, you know, they fall for some of this network marketing stuff. They just end up going more
into
it.
Hey, Steve, why are you talking about me? You want to know about,
I think we've all been there.
Network marketing deals? Ask me. I'm the king. Like, oh, let's try this one now. Oh, that didn't work. Let's try this one. Oh, that actually, I've had a few that worked out short term, but nothing like the magical, never ending, you know, amount of money, you know, mailbox money, as they used to call it back in the day. That's how old I'm getting. We had the mailbox
money.
Yeah. It was just passive income for days. You'd build up a network and you will have passive income for the rest of your life. Yeah, 0.0001% of people that get into network marketing achieve that. And so it's possible. And that's the trick. It's possible. But it's very unlikely.
Yeah, I always said that all the people that I met in network marketing were all garage qualified. They all bought all their product, and they were qualified to keep it in their garage because they weren't
going
to.
Oh, dude, I needed a bigger garage.
Yeah. You need a couple stores.
Dude, I was doing, when I was in college, I was doing that. You remember, this will date me. Remember that old thing that used to go around and you get an email, right? This was back when email was fairly newer. I was in college, so this was the late 90s. And it was like, okay, you have a list. Here's your list. And then you send $5 to the person on the top of the list or whatever it is. And then you put your name on the bottom of the list. And then you email blast it out to thousands and thousands of people on your list. And the whole idea was eventually your name would work its way to the top. And then you get all these $5 checks from all over the place, right? So I did that, and I got a P.O. box, and I'm 20 years old, 19 years old. I'm in my dorm room, dude. So yeah. I must have been like, no, actually, I was 19. And I made $20 on that one.
Ooh,
and I also
killed
it. I also almost got expelled from college my freshman year because I blasted out so many emails. This was way back in the day, and I was using email. That I had screwed up the servers for a couple of days and basically caused the servers of the school, because I'm doing this from my dorm room, I choked out the servers from the school. I was blasting out so many spam emails about this thing. I had to go to the dean's office and talk, what did I do and why I shouldn't be expelled from the school. I had to talk my way out of that one. Luckily, I didn't get kicked out, but I made $20.
It was well worth
Absolutely.
It.
Absolutely. And I got the bug, Steve. Gave me the bug. I was like, wait a minute. If I could just get my own server.
Well, I think you got infected. That's what you did. So, Damon, I have always said that the definition of debt is it's just a math problem surrounded by emotion. If you could just look at the situation logically, the math will tell you exactly what most likely the appropriate answer is. It's all this other messy stuff. And speaking of messy stuff, I think the next emotion that I've had people go through over the years, it's really sad. And you've probably had people too. But it's suicide.
Yeah.
People who end their lives because of their debt. And once you realize really what debt is, and it's just a math problem, and people aren't going to think that much about you and all that other stuff. There's just no reason to end your life.
No, there's... I tell people it's just debt. There's always a solution for it.
Yeah,
And the math is the easy part. The math is easy. It's the emotion that it's wrapped in is the hard part. So once you just can get through that emotion and just... And again, I know you can't, well, just don't be emotional about it. I know you, it's like, you can't, you can say that.
It's easy to say.
It's easy to say. But is I guess, if you could somehow find a way, because I did this back in the day, you just got to compartmentalize it if you can. Like, you just say, you know what? This is a big problem, but it can get fixed. There's always a solution. No matter, if you got into it, you can get out of it. No matter what the solution is, there's one there. And if you can compartmentalize that, still move forward in your life, doing the things that you enjoy doing, and then at the same time, getting advice and guidance on how to deal with that, but don't let that overwhelm your life. It's just debt. It's you know, for whatever reason, doesn't matter if it was gambling debt, and yeah, you can beat yourself up all day long, but you know, now you can have an opportunity to do better moving forward. That's what life's about, and life's short. And I think the older I get, the more cynical I get. I think this goes on with a lot of people, the more cynical I get about the system and how it works, and you know, banks and you know, just corporations just getting wealthy off of people just having this emotion about certain, well, I got to pay the Chase bill.
What are they going to think?
No matter what, I got to pay it.
Oh my God.
And you, as you get older, you kind of see how that game is played and you start to have a different perspective on the priorities that people should have in their life. And the bank should never be the top priority in your life. You know, they voluntarily took a risk on you. Sometimes risks work out, sometimes they don't. People invest their money in projects all the time that don't work out. That's why they charge 25, 30% interest
right.
on credit cards and all these late fees and all this stuff. They know there's going to be inherent risk. They know some people are going to borrow that money and for whatever reason, not going to be able to pay it back. That's why Steve always says, they don't care about you. They're not thinking about you. You're just a statistic. What was that story you told in the last podcast about the lady saying, well, just file bankruptcy. I don't care. Click.
Yeah.
Like, it doesn't matter.
Yeah. No, you're just a number on a spreadsheet. And if you could see things from the other side, like you go to a collection center and the collectors there, they're not all happy all the time about their job and everything else. The computer is auto-dialing numbers and then connecting them. And then they get yelled at all day long.
Oh, yeah. Well, the turnover rate at debt collection agencies is astronomical. It's almost as high as debt settlement companies.
Right. I mean, the number doesn't come up and the screen populates and goes, Bob's a loser.
Yeah.
There's just numbers.
Well, and
a
lot of people, I think the turnover rate of these debt settlement companies, because when we used to do articles on the website and, we'd get insiders basically like, oh, I used to work for company XYZ and they're the worst ever and they do this and they do that. I think a lot of the turnover on those companies is because people get in, they're, oh, look at all this money I can make. And then maybe they have, a little bit of sales background and they're oohed and awed and all this stuff. But the longer they work there, the more they start to realize that most of my clients that I signed up that I thought I was helping are actually getting screwed and they're ending up worse off. I'm not saying debt settlement, doesn't work. Even a blind squirrel finds a nut some days, right? So, it can work, but at the same time, the way they're pushing it and they're mass pushing it in the marketplace and they're trying to pitch everybody on it, I think a lot of people that actually have a little bit of, I don't want to say heart, like everybody working there doesn't have heart, but they start to realize like, wait a minute, this is not as good as I thought it was. It's not as good as I've been telling people. I feel personally responsible. I enrolled Susie into this program and now it's not working out or whatever. I think eventually that gets to a lot of them and they're like, you know what? I'm making good money, but I can't keep doing this. I want to do something else that fulfills me and this doesn't do it.
Yeah. I mean, it also applies to credit counselors as well. You weren't there at that meeting, but I was sitting with a group of credit counselors talking about they were giving me examples of clients' situations. And I was saying like, in that particular situation, it sounds like debt settlement would make more sense.
And the horror shock on their face was...
Oh, yeah. They thought the devil had dropped me off.
How dare you?
Yeah, that's horrible. And nobody should ever file bankruptcy. No.
A lot of counseling going on there. We're counseling as much as we are. We are going to counsel you to buy our program. That's the counseling.
That's right. You need to buy our widget, our product.
Nobody should ever do this.
I actually had a client who jumped off their balcony because of their debt. Now, when I say clients that have done this stuff, it's never the clients who came on board and I had a chance to talk to, and after a couple of conversations, they finally got on the right page with the right thinking, eliminated their stinking thinking. And it's always the people who like reached out for the first time and they're just on edge. I had another client one time who was so embarrassed about his debt, he wanted to get out of debt, that pre-client, that he went to Vegas, gambled all the money he could find, lost it, went home, and left a note that he was so embarrassed and ashamed about what he had done that he killed his family.
Oh, God.
Yeah, because he couldn't face telling them. His wife and I think it was two girls. So there's no reason to... I can understand how people feel that way. When I was deep in debt, I probably felt very dark as well. But the best thing that you can do is not, in those moments, it's not try to figure out what's the best thing to do. For me, what are the next steps I should take? How should I get out of debt? No, I think the best thing you should do at that point is talk to somebody, and whether it's, a hotline or even reaching out to like Damon Day and talking about your situation. Once you can understand what the reality is about dealing with your debt, then you'll be like, why was I thinking that?
Because
you're thinking it doesn't mean it's
and
reality.
Again, guys, we said this in the last podcast. The system is set up to give you a do-over. It's built into the system. Like, oops, that didn't work. Did everything I could. I'm going to need a do-over on that. Okay, one do-over coming up. You can get do-overs. You get lots of do-overs in life. If it take a swing. It doesn't work out. Okay, I need a do-over.
Well, the last emotional situation is after you've lived through your debt, whether you've paid it off or whatever, I think a lot of people suffer from financial PTSD. Post-traumatic stress disorder affects people in lots of ways, you know, who have not been at war. There are many situations can be very traumatic. Now, one such person that studies these things is Dr. Maggie Baker. And on the getoutofdebt.org website, if you search for financial PTSD, you'll find this very long article and this information in it. But what Dr. Baker says is the symptoms of financial PTSD are easy to recognize. She says, ask yourself these following 7 questions. 1, do you think about your money more in the last few weeks? 2, are you worried about the current and future performance of your retirement? 3, do you wake up at night with persistent memories of a past financial problem? And 4, have any small events, such as a friend asking if you're going on vacation, caused you anxiety or worried money thoughts? And 5, do you feel a jolt of anxiety when financial statements arrive? Yeah, I can relate to that. 6, do you avoid opening or reading your financial statements? And 7, do you have a growing sense of fear, helplessness, or hopelessness? And if all of those exist, if 4 or more of those answers are yes, then you probably are suffering with financial PTSD.
Yeah. Well, I can definitely relate to letting the mail pile up. It's like, well, I know there's no checks in there, you know, so what do I need to open it for? I'd always tell my wife, this is, you know, back in the day before we filed the bankruptcy. I was like, well, they'll still accept my money tomorrow. Why do I need to deal with it today?
Right. Well,
and that is absolutely true. They'll take it tomorrow. I'll deal with it tomorrow. Right now, I got to focus on making more money or they're not going to get any.
Yeah. My advice to people over the years that reached out for help was, and they thought I was crazy for telling them this, but, you know, now that we've connected and we're going to work together and we're going to find a solution to this, I'm going to get you to the other side. You don't need to worry about that. And I'm going to get you doing better financially. I would say the first thing I want you to do is nothing.
Yeah.
I don't want you to open the mail. I don't want you to answer the phone. I want you to take at least a 1 week break. And, you know, let's try to get you back together so you're not on the edge like you are right now. Now, some of the symptoms of PTSD, let me know if you think that you've had any people you've talked to, Damon, that have felt this. The symptoms of PTSD fall into 3 main categories. Reliving the event, which disturbs day-to-day activity, like a flashback or that, you know, that hot flush that you feel when all of a sudden you think about your financial situation. 2 is avoidance, like an emotional numbing or feeling that you just don't care about anything. You're detached. You have a lack of interest in things that you used to do. You're feeling down and depressed. And 3, hyperarousal, difficulty concentrating, startling easily, having exaggerated responses, and having trouble falling or staying asleep. Those sound familiar for people you talked with?
Yeah. I mean, they don't come right out and, you know, say those things, but, you know, I get clients not quite a few, but maybe every once in a while where, you know, the first thing I do is I start with just a financial cash flow worksheet when we first get started, and it doesn't have to be accurate or perfect. I don't need them tracking all their expenses for a month or anything like that. I just want to get a snapshot of, you know, what you got coming in, what you've got going out, you know, who you owe what money to, interest rates, things like that. It's pretty basic, one sheet. And I tell people, look, I don't need you pouring through your bank statements trying to tell me exactly what you spend on food every month. Just do your best kind of estimate. And that gives us a place to start. And sometimes it'll take me weeks to get that back. And I'll be like, you know, every few days, like, hey, just checking in. You know, again, doesn't have to be perfect. And, you know, but that goes back to that, you know, that paralysis or that wanting to put it off, or it goes back to like not wanting to face it. Because once you start putting all those numbers down on the paper, the biggest feedback I get once I do get it back is, oh my gosh, I had no idea it was this bad. And they're not always that bad. But for a lot of my clients, that's the first time they ever just sat down and wrote out what their bills are and what they have coming in. And for a lot of people, that in and of itself is a big shock. Like, oh my gosh, I didn't realize I'm negative $2,000 a month But that's part of the beginning of the process. We have to first come to realization of where we're at, and then we can do you know, better moving forward and make smarter decisions based on the reality, not based on, you know, oh, I think I spend this or I think I spend that. Because once we have a starting point, then if need be, we actually can start tracking it. And there's a lot of great apps out there that you can use to automatically track spending just to get an idea of, okay, what do you think you're spending? And then what are you actually spending? We can do that as part of the process. And that's the technology today makes it so much easier than it was 10, 15 years ago, where it's like, okay, every time you spend money, you have to write that down in a ledger or whatever and track every single expense. Okay, Snickers bar at 7-Eleven, 69 cents.
Yeah, you don't need
and
to
it was
that.
69 cents because back in the day when you had to write it down, it used to freaking be 69 cents. Now it's like, Snickers bar, $2.89, 7-Eleven. It's like, what the hell? No wonder I'm in debt.
Damon, because of financial PTSD or leaving yourself with an incorrect factual-based emotion about dealing with your debt, I think that people even like, I was going to say, name rhymes with Hamzy, but I think Dave Ramsey is a good example of this, and I'm going to use it because people have heard this shtick all these years. You know, Dave has said, quote, "I've never forgotten how painful bankruptcy was for both of us." He says, quote, "I feel that pain to this very day." And he also says that bankruptcy is as bad as losing a loved one and leaves deep wounds both to the psyche and to the credit report. Mm-hmm. So when he was saying this and coming up with his approach about how bad bankruptcy was, I think he was still suffering from just dealing with his, because, you know, he went bankrupt from dealing with his financial situation. And now he's kind of stuck in a loop, because if Dave's advice or any popular personal finance person's advice was, you need to look at all the solutions based on your particular situation. There's not a one size fits all, and there's certainly not a one size will eliminate all of the emotions and ways you're feeling. Don't fall for that.
Yeah, and I, you know, I like Dave. I kind of grew up listening to him. I mean, I think he's got a lot of good common sense advice on a lot of things. But it, like I said, and we've said this many times on the show, is it always goes back to, I don't like his absolutisms. And I can't speak to what Dave's emotions were after the bankruptcy, but mine were the exact opposite. I've never once, God, man, I wish I wouldn't have fought. Never one time. And that was in 2012. So it's been, what, 12, 13 years ago? And in fact, after I did it, I was like, maybe I should have done it a little bit sooner. Yeah, okay, it's all gone. I bought a couple $100,000 in debt, get a fresh start, do better moving forward. And I had a very positive experience in a sense that it took a big burden off of my plate. And it allowed me to, you know, open up and free up. And that was really when my business started to grow and expand by leaps and bounds, because it almost like it freed up that, it wasn't necessarily a secret, but back in those days, I wasn't exactly, you know, talking to clients going, yeah, well, I'm a couple hundred grand in debt. I definitely need to file bankruptcy, right? But then once I did it, I was like, you know what? I can hide from this, or I can embrace it. And as soon as I was, you know, open about it, like, hey, I filed bankruptcy. This is, you know, I can speak from firsthand experience and da-da-da-da-da-da. That was some of the biggest feedback I used to always get. It's like, well, if you're brave enough to say on your website that you'd filed bankruptcy and it wasn't that bad, I figured you're the guy I want to talk to, because you're the guy that's going to be honest with me.
Well, the funny thing is, when I went bankrupt in 1990, I probably spent the next 4 years living through all of these emotions. I felt ashamed and embarrassed and depressed. And in the beginning, I felt hopeless, like I was a total failure and didn't honor my promises and all that other stuff. And then one day I woke up and thought, you know, the way I'm feeling doesn't necessarily have to be reality. You know, what are the facts? And it was because of that that I then started all my research and investigating and began helping others through my experience. So now you flash forward to when you were going through your situation, and I had finally realized what reality was, financial reality. And so when you filed bankruptcy, I didn't say, Damon, you're a loser and everything else. I said, thank God. Thank God you finally did it and we can move forward. And it did turn out to be a smart move, the right move for you.
Yeah. Like and again, everybody's different, but I never went through what you went through. I was just like, huh, okay. And obviously I had a different set of circumstances and I had a lot more, you know, helpful information from you about the whole process going, you know, you went through it 20 years before I did. And of course, I think times were different in 1990 than they were in 2012, as far as perceptions about bank, you know, it was still like, oh my gosh, they're going to publish it in the newspaper and they're going to announce it at the town square that, oh, poor Steve didn't do very good or whatever. I really do think the time in which we live was different. And even now more so today where, I mean, you start thinking about these people that have 200, 300 grand in student loan debt. It's almost become a point where it's badge of honor is not the right word, but you get in some of these forums and people are like, oh yeah, well, I work at Starbucks and I owe $250,000. So there you go. Like they're just more open to like, they're realizing that they're not alone. Like this is, and again, as I get older, the more cynical I get about the system and about the student loan stuff may have started with some good intentions, but I don't think anybody thought through the unintended consequences of just giving anybody that wanted money access to easy money. But we're living through that right now. They ruined hundreds of thousands of people's lives with that crap. And that's when I get to the point where it's like, you really care about paying them back? Why? I give them the big F you, screw you. You know, you've been sucking off the backs of the middle class in this country for far too long. It's time to take some of it back. Well, I'm getting a little deeper than I planned on this one. I'll shut up now.
Well, don't start crying. It's like you walk into a car dealership and they go, okay, well, just pick out whatever car you want. And, you know, government's guaranteeing your payments. See you later. And if I said that to you, you would think that's just utterly ridiculous and irresponsible. But with student loans, that's basically it.
Sign and drive event, baby. I got this at the sign and drive.
Yeah.
All we need is some ink on a piece of paper and you get a car. You get a car. You get a car. All right. We all get cars.
If you can fog a mirror, it's yours.
There you go. I don't understand why the bank was confused when I couldn't make the payment 6 months later. Didn't they look at my finances? Nope. Sign and drive.
Well, yeah. Well, you mentioned earlier the interest rate and risk, and the higher the interest rate is on a credit card, for example, what that should tell you is the more risky people the bank is willing to give the card to.
Yeah.
So, because interest rate equals risk. So
the fact that some people are going to go bankrupt is already built in. They already built it and they're still making money.
Yeah. Damon, that is the end of my list. And if anyone is feeling any of those ways, I recommend that they go DamonDay.com or go visit the getoutofdebt.org site and you can listen to our past podcasts. You can be sure to subscribe to the podcast. Actually, the most popular platform is the Apple podcast. So you can subscribe there and don't be afraid to reach out, ask questions. You are not alone and your emotions are not necessarily reality. So I give you a big hug if I could. Have a good day. Damon, I will see ya.
Peace.